CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. My name is Gareth Armstrong, and across from me, the lovely Hlubi Mboya.
Hello, hello, hello.
And today we are in a very privileged position to be speaking to a CEO who's not just a CEO, but a founder of a telecommunications business. And if I've got that wrong, I hope I'll get corrected. But I think on their website, they call themselves an end-to-end business, which is really interesting. Wow. And there's going to be a whole bunch of questions that come out of that.
You know, I'm always interested in this kind of telecommunications and commerce kind of space. Yeah. So I can't wait to have this conversation.
Well, before we do that, if you've never heard the show before, why would you be listening to Future CEOs? Well, if you're a young up-and-coming entrepreneur, perhaps you're in a position where you are employed somewhere and you want to fast-track your career, well, this is the show for you. If you can say, I'm a future CEO, well, you're listening to the right conversation today. Hlubi, shall we introduce our guest?
Let's do this. Calvin.
Hi.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Please tell us who you are and what you do.
So we're a telecoms company founded in 2004 and focus on end-to-end telecommunications. So we're an ISP ultimately to make it simple.
What does that mean?
We provide internet,
okay,
voice,
yes,
video conferencing.
Yes, wow.
Email, internet, all of the above.
That's what end-to-end, of course, means, right?
No wonder he's at Cliff Central.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Tell us more. We're intrigued.
You know we run the streaming for Cliff Central?
Apparently you do, yes.
Thank you very much for allowing us to get out there. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
So we did introduce you as a CEO of a company, but that also then founded the company. So let's go all the way back.
Yes.
And let's talk about where this all began. There must have been an itch you were trying to scratch, because that just seems to be where companies originate. Was there an itch?
Certainly. I mean, I was in the corporate space for a long time and just tired of the corporate space and saw that there was a gap in the market from a convergence perspective. In 2005, the monopoly was, the law changed, so the monopoly was removed.
Mm.
So I thought, geez, there's got to be an opportunity to be able to provide services now that we don't only have to use the incumbent. So with that in mind, I thought, geez, well, I'm just going to go and resell one of the provider's products. It's going to be simpler that way. I didn't think of actually starting my own business and building a network. Certainly wasn't my aim to start
okay,
with.
Okay, interesting.
Mm. And geez, I just found that the guys were inadequate. The products are selling to family and friends as you do, and it just wasn't working. So slowly but surely, just
it wasn't about the quality. Am I correct?
It's all about the quality. Yeah. You know, you just cannot provide that level of service. So I think that was where we made a big difference. Is starting very very small and just making small incremental changes to the way things were done. And eventually we ended up with a network. Certainly wasn't planned that way per se. But yeah, I think we've got a good network now and are making a huge difference in the market.
Hlubi, what I love about what I'm hearing here is that it was all about service and providing the quality, as you highlighted. And that really is the differentiator, isn't it? If you are a small business versus one of these larger, let's call it conglomerates or larger monopoly kind of brands,
sure.
Then that's where you have to differentiate, really. Because, I mean, big brands can undercut you with price and all sorts of different
marketing
things.
Marketing and everything
exactly,
else.
Exactly, exactly. And so you really do have to provide something unique and special. You're moving along in this journey. It's now 8 years, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, 8 years. Year one, year two, year three, maybe there's incremental growth that is happening, but of course there are also some big mistakes that are happening, right?
There's no doubt. And I mean, one of the biggest challenges is always capital, access to capital.
I was just about to ask, where did you get the money? Who funded you? How did you do it? Yeah.
You can always start. That's the easy part. It's once you start growing and things start to actually accelerating, you're doing well, now you actually started running cash flow issues and so on and so forth.
Yep.
And I think if there's one thing I did wrong is not budget it properly enough. I think, and most startups don't do that. They don't spend enough time on the actual budgets and cash flows and the financial side. It's not the fun stuff, especially when you're an entrepreneur. You actually want to focus on doing what you're good at.
Mm.
And it's certainly not the budget and financial. So I was lucky enough to find two guys out there who were sitting on a pile of cash, didn't know what to do with it.
Oh, that's
why can't that happen to all of us?
That's always a gift, right? Pot of gold at the end of a rainbow.
So I managed to get them to invest, and that certainly started the journey, because we could actually start to invest in proper infrastructure, and then take the business forward. And that was the start of things that really changed things, was when we had money.
Mm.
You have so many skills in business, especially being a leader in your business.
100%.
Skills or connections? What is success all about?
Listen, skills is a start, but connections is really what it's about. You know, if you don't, a leader's one of the most challenging things when you start out a company, because you start out as a pure entrepreneur, you one or two, maybe five people, and it's quite easy to manage. The second you start to get to 100, 150 staff, it's a completely different animal, and you now need to lead from the front, and it's no longer just this nice little startup that was really easy to manage. So that's where you need mentors, is a good thing to have. And then relationships in the industry, you know, don't burn bridges. Make sure that you're focused. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a critical aspect. You know, guys come along and they get a deal for 5 cents cheaper, and they'll screw over a provider that's really provided them good service over the while, you know. So try and stay faithful to the guys who've helped you through the journey. It's a critical part.
I love the point or the idea of loyalty.
Credibility, Gareth.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where it comes from, doesn't it? So credibility is built on something, and really I guess that something is trust, isn't it?
Well, no doubt. Integrity.
Exactly. I'm going to pull us back, if I may, to the question that I did ask earlier, which was about mistakes. And I don't know if you sidestepped it really well, because it was a nice polished answer. but give us a story. You made a mistake when this happened, and this was the lesson you learned.
I think one of the biggest mistakes we made was trying to grow too fast.
Okay, very nice.
I tried to buy one of my competitors. Well, I actually did buy one of my competitors, but we didn't do the due diligence properly. Didn't understand the cultural differences. So I think one of the critical things, if you're ever going to merge two companies, got to understand the cultures first. If the cultures don't mix, don't even try it. That would be the first thing. Cultures were completely different. So when we merged, we actually ended up with two broken businesses, where before we had two very successful ones. So it set us back about 2 years, trying to fix the cultures, trying to get things back to where they were, and then we could only start moving forward. So, you know, the adage that one and one should equal four? Well, one and one equaled one in this case, which was a huge mistake, and it did set us back 2 years. But lessons learned out of that were massive, and I'm glad we did it when we did, because it was in our probably third or fourth year, so we've had time to catch up. I mean, I think at that stage we were probably 12 months ahead of the game. It set us back to where we weren't ahead of the game. We were just part of the game. But now I think we're ahead again. I'd like to think that we're probably 6 to 12 months ahead of the game again.
Yes.
So, yeah, big mistakes, but as long as you learn from them, it's good.
What does it take to be ahead of the game? What does it take to be a leader of the pack?
I think you've got to be in it. I think one of the things, especially as a CEO, you can't sit behind a desk, read enough articles and then understand the industry. You've got to get out there and speak to your customers, speak to the industry and understand what's going on, and then understand the need. Once you understand the need, you really can start to innovate. And then once you start innovating, you become, well, you become head of the pack. And that's something we've done incredibly well.
How have you done it together, though? So, I mean, it's one thing doing it as an entrepreneur, this passionate individual that's driving their business, which consists of a small team of maybe 10 or 20. But then suddenly when you get a little bit bigger, you are really bogged down by certain governance issues, maybe a wheel that turns a little bit slower because of multiple points of decision making. And how do you do it? How do you be a leader as an organization?
I think that's a huge challenge. To move or transition from a typical entrepreneur into a leader. You used to be able to be the innovator. You used to do everything. You used to be able to have brides with your staff on a Friday afternoon. You're now too big and you can't do that kind of stuff. So you've actually got to make a physical mindset shift to say, how do I lead these staff? How to create a passion in them to do and believe in what we started out in this company? And one of the things we learned is, it's not about the what. It's not about the fact that we just offer products and services and internet and stuff like that. It's about the why. Why do we do that? It's because we want to be the best, because we want to simplify and innovate. And I think if you can get that across, so stop worrying about the what. Yes, so we provide internet, but so does everybody else. But why do we do it? And I think that was a challenge that we had to do, was actually sort of get the why across. And I had to change my mindset from saying, what, this is what we do,
to
say,
so
why do we do it, guys?
That's so true.
Let's get some passion into it. And I think if there's a company out there like Apple, they do that the best. They don't talk about the what, they talk about the why. And if you can sort of, if there's anything to look out for, is focus on the why. And why should we be better?
Gareth.
I'm enjoying this conversation, except that in the back of my mind, I've got a couple of questions hanging there. And so I'd like to dig into your personal life, if that's okay.
Sure.
Just maybe your personal history. That's probably a better way to say it, right?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I mean, personal life is a part of this. So Luby and myself were very privileged to be able to go and address a bunch of students a couple of days ago. And there we asked the question, do you want to be a CEO? And part of sharing with them was, well, what are you willing to sacrifice in order to be a CEO? So there's a personal life element here, because of course a Marco Tafani, who's Anglo-American CEO, I think 3 wives, 7 kids. So he's really given his life to the business, although he doesn't regret all of it, but he regrets some of it. So
Certainly. Maybe
there's a little bit of a personal aspect here, but can you tell us about yourself? What's your journey? What's your background? Where do you come from? Who are you as you sit here in front of us now?
Yeah, started out, I went to Pretoria Boys High, matriculated there, and after that I studied a computer course, a simple computer course. Went into the corporate world for 4 years, 5 years. Really worked my butt off there. Absolutely enjoyed what I was doing to a point. And then the red tape just was too much. And I said, listen, this is not something I want to be involved in anymore. And then the real pain and suffering started. I mean, being an entrepreneur is not easy. There's a hell of a lot of sacrifice. And as you say, I mean, your examples are critical. I mean, I went through multiple relationships. There's no way, the very few girlfriends who are willing to stick around for the 3-4 o'clock and you're not out drinking, you're ultimately out working. You've got to be able to sacrifice the time and the effort, but it is worth it in the end. And if there's anything that there's a take out, is that if you're thinking you're working too hard on it, you can still go further, I promise you, because we're far more resilient than we think at times. But yeah, so it's a tough journey. There's no doubt about that.
As you sit here, though, you're married?
No,
you're not married.
No.
Okay, I mean, and that's an interesting dynamic as well. This idea of adding someone to this ship or this train that's moving forward. Alan Knott Craig sat with us and he said, marry young. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, marry young for X, Y, and Z reasons. Now, some people may disagree with that.
There's no doubt. I completely agree with
you that. Agree with it. Why would you agree?
Because it's so difficult for people to understand the journey you've been through. So, you know, even now I work long hours, but this has just become the norm. So it's for
what's your typical day like? Okay, after you've answered Gareth's question, just tell us a typical day in your life.
Sure. So typically, you know, trying to get someone in when they don't understand this is very normal and it's been part of your life for 10, 12 years, to bring them in and say, well, there's no such thing as an 8-to-5. That doesn't exist in my life. And unfortunately, it can't, especially because we're still growing. And when we don't have millions of rands of marketing budgets and everything else. We've still got to be very, very penny-wise. Well, we've got to be careful of every cent we spend. It's the bottom line.
So what time do you get up in the morning?
4:45.
And then?
Check emails from 5 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Gym from 6 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll get changed, breakfast, etc., and then I take my little boy to school at 8. So, and that's a critical part in terms of managing your life, because if you don't have that kind of a start, if you've got emails, if you've got to get into the office at 8 and then start checking emails, you're already behind the curve. It's important that when you get into the office, you're ahead of the curve, you can start managing the company.
Working on instead of in, as they say?
100%. I check my emails once a day only.
Interesting.
And that's
in the morning?
In the morning.
Wow.
And only that, because I find email, as much as a productive tool, I think it's something that completely overruns people's lives.
True that.
And
true that.
With mobile phones and smart devices, we spend all our lives on there checking a second mail. We have to read it. Why do we have to read it? We don't. 24
hours. I like that advice. I'm going to take that.
Well, here's a little. Someone said this to us somewhere in one of our shows, one of these 200 or so episodes that we're sitting with. They said, if it's critical, they'll call you.
I completely agree. 24 hours is surely long enough or short enough to respond to an email. Mm. I think that's absolutely acceptable. So that's my mantra, and I won't change it. I
love that.
But it's made a huge difference to my productivity and anxiety levels, actually. Because emails create anxiety. Like, geez, what emails there? What haven't I responded to?
Yeah.
And humans are not good at multitasking. We think we are, but we're actually not very good at it. So we end up in a conversation, reading an email, half responding.
Absolutely.
Ruby never listens to me. never.
It's ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Best advice you've ever received?
Probably to focus on the finances. If there's one bit of advice I would give anybody, hire a damn good financial person up front.
Mm.
Because we can do the rest. But if your finances are not there, we only do this to make money, ultimately. Well, listen, not really. That's not our only goal.
We understand.
I'll clarify
that.
Yeah,
we understand.
But if your finances are not managed, it doesn't matter what you do and how good your product is or whatever. You're not going to make it.
And this is where the meaning of what you do comes in. So you may have the best intentions in the world, but ultimately the money funds what those intentions are. And I think that's what you were getting to, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think if money is your biggest driver, entrepreneurship's not your game.
Interesting.
Because there's so much passion and stuff, and you've got to have a bigger vision for it. Money's an end result of it, and that's true. But it can't be your primary factor for doing it. But yeah, if a second mistake I made, didn't hire the right finance people at the right time. And yeah, it cost me a lot of money at the time. But yeah, you learn those lessons.
Now, it's just, I feel like we're name dropping. And we don't do it to name drop at all. But another conversation we had with the Creative Council, there's two CEOs there, of course, Gil and Run. And both of them shared this exact point, is that they to try and cut costs or to save, they employed the wrong finance person. And ultimately, not at the moment,
they
paid the price in millions of lost earnings, potential lost earnings. And so thank you for sharing that piece of advice.
You spoke about mentorship. Do you have a mentor or are you a mentor to other people? Mentors.
I do have a mentor, certainly, but I'd love to be a mentor to other people because I've learned so much in this process that young people need to, I mean, our country needs entrepreneurship. And if I can impart some of the mistakes I've made, the lessons I've learned, and that's both good and bad. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff I've learned, and, you know, if we could only learn these things earlier in life, and then the bad stuff, don't do that because it's certainly detrimental to your business going forward.
What's the difference between coaching and mentoring, though? So, I mean, sometimes we get confused between the two. So, when we speak about a mentor, what are you seeing in your head? What kind of relationship?
So, for me, mentoring is someone who's actually been through it and who can actually give real life advice. Coaching is similar, but not necessarily. It's more a learnt. Someone studied it and can give you the theory. You
know? Maybe model-based versus experience-based.
Experience-based. That's exactly it. And that's how I see it. You know, I love mentoring and I want to mentor because it's real-life experience. Say, listen, the books say that, but this is what really happens. And I think that's a critical part of it. And that's why, for me, mentoring is far more important. You know, like life coaches. I mean, you can do a 3-week life coaching course and now you're a life coach. I mean, that's not really, in my mind, useful to a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean,
to business.
What I see in your eyes and hear in your voice is the credibility thing again. We used the word earlier. Someone that's done a three-week course is really not credible, perhaps.
No, and especially not to someone who's spent 10 years of their life, blood, sweat, and tears in a business. Now they're going to try and give you advice after 3 weeks. That's just not going to work. And vice versa, you want someone who's actually be able to give you proper, credible advice and help them go forward. How to get access to finance, how to find the right people. I mean, if there's one thing I'll also impart is that the recruitment process, people will make or break your business. Something I did very badly when I started is just first person walking, oh, you look cool, we'll hire you, no problem. But the problem is you need to hire the right people.
You hire for skill and maybe not for qualification or the perception of, right?
Qualification is not a big thing in my life. I don't have a qualification, so I don't make that a big prerequisite. But
what are you looking for when you hire?
Attitude is a big one.
Amen.
Can-do attitude, that's the best one. If you've got attitude, we can work with you is number one. Then the other two factors, certainly, we do what is called a strength test and then an MIT test.
What's a strength and MIT test?
Strength is quickly. Looking at what are your strengths. So what are you good at? What are you not good at? Okay, so it was founded by a guy called Marcus Buckingham. And it's a simple test. What are you really good at? So what do you want to do? When you wake up, what are the five things that you're really good at, irrespective? And that's what we're looking at. So this guy, you might think you're in sales, but actually you shouldn't be in sales. You should be an admin or whatever else. Yeah. And it kind of gives us that because that's what happens often with people without degrees, is that their parents were in sales or in admin or whatever else. So they go and do that. Doesn't mean that's actually what they're good at or where they could become good at. So that's certainly a fantastic test for us. And MIT is more, it's an IQ test ultimately, but a different version of it. So it just sort of says, you know, great. So you've got these strengths, these abilities. Now, how strong are they, and are they able to add value? So
can you convert it into some kind of critical thinking that's going to add value?
What's underneath the engine? You know, what
love
is there?
Love that. You said you had a mentor. Who was that?
It's a shareholder of mine at the moment. And it's great having that. Completely different to me. Not an entrepreneurial background. Very much banking, gone through the investments and so on and so forth. But it's so nice having a completely different mentor. And I think that's a critical thing. You don't want mentors done exactly what you've done because you need something different. Got a CA background. Those things help, especially in said finance. So that was what I was looking for. Someone who's very calm. Someone you can phone and say, listen, I've got this problem. What would you do? And it's nice, simple advice. And that was so important to me. Is I just wanted someone I could pick up the phone and say, I've just had this. I don't know what to do. Can you give me some advice?
I guess some people may say, well, hold on. I'm going to give you advice, but actually I have a business. I'm a consultant, so I'll sell you the advice. but that's a mentoring relationship is then, of course, deeper. There's an established something there. And I just wanted to emphasize that point. So you don't want to
get a trust relationship.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not getting a mentor to try and get free advice. No. There's something more there. A mentor also asks you hard questions, challenges you. And knows because if I ask this question, it will lead to this kind of thought, kind of realization. You did introduce one of our questions in one of the things that you said about books. And well, the book says this, but actually, what don't leadership books teach about being a leader in a business? Actually.
How difficult it is.
Okay.
Start there. And then certainly the most critical thing is how to manage people. And how to create the passion in people. So the leadership books will tell you all the fluffy stuff about what you need to do, do's and don'ts and all of that kind of stuff. But it doesn't tell you how to create that passion in people. You know, as entrepreneurs, you tend to be passionate. And how do you transfer that passion across to another individual? Understanding that they don't have the same background as you and there's so many complexities. So the first thing I learned is go and understand every individual before you're going to ignite any passion in them. Because if I make assumptions about you or make assumptions, and we all make assumptions about everybody, I'm never going to ignite the real passion. So go and understand your staff, even if you've got 150 of them, go and understand every single one of them, understand their backgrounds, then start the process of leadership and creating passion and all of those kind of things.
So let me just jump in here very quickly. Time has moved very, very fast.
Great conversations always do, guys.
Exactly. So, Luby, pose a final question to our Mr. Collette here around CEO leadership.
I always like to take it back. If you could speak to a 10-year or 15-year younger you and give them advice about your journey, what would you say to yourself?
I would say don't rush it. I wanted to rush my, I just wanted to be overnight success.
Of course, we all do.
I want to do overnight success. Rush it. I think had I not tried to rush it, I probably would be more successful even earlier. You know,
sure.
Take a step back sometimes. We don't see the wood for the trees. You get so stuck into things, you just miss it. So take a breather. It's you will get there. If you've got the right amount of passion, you'll get there. But take a step back and take a breather. I wish I'd just slow down a little bit sometimes.
Okay, Phoebe, so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to turn Calvin's earphones off so that he won't be able to hear your comment about him. Okay, go. Okay, it's not true. It's not true. So a final thought. What have you thought about this conversation?
I want to be a future CEO. I want to empower other people to be future CEOs. And you really gave us fantastic tools that are so relevant to the hustle and bustle and just the clutter of just trying to make it in Johannesburg today. So thank you for just guiding us and streamlining us in a really great, structured and directional path.
Thank you very much.
Calvin, yeah, thank you. It was a genuine conversation, definitely very authentic, very real, and we do appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being on the show.
All right, guys. If you would like to hear more of these kinds of conversations, go to cliffcentral.com or alternatively, future-ceos.com, and you will find the conversations there. Until next time, we will see you there. Go forth. And what, Phoebe?
Advocate, amplify, catalyze.
See you then.
Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.